You're listening to the Leafs Lunch Podcast, Hour 1.
Welcome to Leafs Lunch. Jim Taddy subbing for Andy Petrillo, who's on Olympic assignment. Kristen Schulten will join us at the bottom of the hour. Ryan S. Clark from The Athletic covering the Seattle Kraken will stop by towards the end of the hour. We're expected to go very shortly to Kyle Dubas, who has a press conference live. We're going to take all of it and then react to it. We're expecting maybe sometime today the Zach Hyman situation, and maybe it's addressed in the press conference. The trade freeze, roster freeze, ends at 1 today, so the Zach Hyman situation certainly front and center in all our concerns, and there are reports out there he's about to become an Edmonton Oiler. So we'll deal with that. We'll deal with the contract offers and all the reports, and it looks like we can't announce anything, but the reports are saying he's got an offer of 8 years at $5 million and 7 years at $5.5 million, and we have other reports that say the Leafs came back with an eight-year offer, but it wasn't in the same ballpark. So this could be a sign and trade, and obviously you understand that if the Leafs sign him, they can sign him for 8 years and nobody else can. And that makes the trade somewhat attractive because it can play with the average, the cap hit and the average stretched out over the term of that contract. So it adds flexibility if, in fact, they need that. Let's go to Kyle Dubas now.
In a moment, please use the raise hand function to let us know if you have a question for Kyle. When you're called upon, you'll have the opportunity to ask a question, a follow-up. Welcome, Kyle.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to start by recognizing what I would say is the courage of Luke Prokop. Earlier this week, Nashville Predators prospect and player on the Calgary Hitmen, to go public with the fact that that he is gay, and as a 19-year-old trying to climb his way through hockey, I thought that was extremely courageous, and I think it was also great to see the tremendous support from the hockey world for Luke. So just wanted to start by recognizing Luke and his courage, and I think it will be a major event that will encourage more young men and young women in our sport to be very comfortable with who they truly are. So that was an excellent way to start the week. Moving on to less important matters, is the actual hockey. We obviously went through the expansion draft process this week. Our strategy going into the expansion draft was to try to get out from a process where we knew that we were going to lose a player by giving up as least we possibly could to Seattle. And with all the information that we acquired from, you know, really the end, from the trade deadline through to the decision on Sunday morning, when submitting our protection list, our determination was to go out and acquire a player for a prospect and late pick, and then allow Seattle to pick between the remaining players on our protected list. And if we got out from the process by giving up the prospect and the late pick, but maintaining our roster, we were content with that. And if they took another player off our roster in a similar position, we had acquired the replacement. So that was our strategy with that. We've got the draft coming up on Friday and Saturday, three picks, second, fifth, and sixth round pick, and then get into free agency next week. And with that, I'll open it up to any and all questions you may have today.
All right, we'll begin with Chris Johnson, Sportsnet. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Kyle, I'm just wondering, you know, it looks like Zach Hyman might be moving on from the team. You know, where are things at for you with him? Are you still hoping to retain his services? And if not, what's it going to take to replace what he brought to you guys?
Yeah, I think it was our intention going in to retain Zach's services. He's been an excellent player for us for his entire career here. And I think everyone loves him as a player and a person. We have certain limits that we can go to. And we have tried to extend ourselves as best we can, knowing that there would be a strong market for him. And so about a week ago now, or 7 or 8 days ago now, we gave Todd Reynolds and Zach permission to begin speaking to other teams, try to move the process along so that we would have a better picture heading into free agency as to where we actually stood and how we could go about trying to replace Zach if that was going to be the conclusion. At this time, I've not heard from Todd regarding the reports this morning, so I can't comment too deeply on that, Chris.
Okay, but would you be open to a sign and trade if that's something that presented itself?
We're open to anything that can help to make our team better. So if there's fair value to be had there, then we'll certainly explore.
Next up, we'll go to Mike Seisberger, NHL.com. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Kyle, thanks for doing this. Obviously, how do you, you know, if you do lose Zach, how do you replace what he brings to the table? Because when we talk about intangibles, he could be the poster child for it.
I don't disagree with you, Mike. Zach has shown night in and night out that he's going to give his very best to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we certainly have valued that over the years, and that's why we've tried to find a solution here. But Zach has earned every dollar that he's going to get in free agency, and he's done it certainly not the easy way as well. So there are going to be times as we go through this, especially with the salary cap being what it is, the commitments that we've made, where we're going to have to make difficult decisions, and it will be on myself more than anybody else and our management group to begin to replace the different talent and the different intangibles that a player brings in the room, and also continue to see growth from our own group of players that are already signed here in those areas.
Thank you.
Next we'll go to Lance Hornby, Toronto Sun. Go ahead, Lance.
Sorry, Kyle. I just put it with the situation of maybe losing a couple of guys. It seems to be your plan right now to save as many off the roster as you can. How do you reconcile that with what happened in the playoffs moving forward?
Sure. I think fairly simply, Lance, I understand that some may look at it and say this group hasn't gotten it done, and thus why aren't there significant changes. But for better or worse, I believe in this group, and I believe that they are going to get it done, and I believe that they're going to win. And I understand that comes with certain doubt because of the fact that we have not broken through in the playoffs, but it's my belief that they will. I believe in them as players. I believe in them as people. And I know that decision lies on me, and the risk is for me and going ahead that way. So I'm comfortable with it. I believe that we're going to see the best version of this group next season that we've seen yet, and I'm willing to bet everything on that.
My follow would be, how many late nights have you had, sleepless nights, wondering one overtime goal changes the whole narrative that we've seen in the past since June 1st?
I've had sleepless nights for other reasons, Lance, but I think once something's over, you try to park it and past it and not live in that and look at how can we take this group and how can we push them to break through. And in the end, that comes down to me doing my job as best I can, especially at a time like this where we haven't met that expectation, and trying to set the group up in a way, whether it's through internal development or finding the pieces that can continue to push us in that direction and have that breakthrough happen. So, you know, this is not a job, I think, where you have many great sleeps night in and night out, as others I'm sure can attest that have done it for far longer. So I knew what I signed up for, and it's a great challenge we have ahead of us, and just looking forward to embracing the challenge ahead versus looking at what might have been with a bounce here or there.
We'll go to Kevin McGran, Toronto Star. Go ahead, Kevin.
There we go. Just two questions, one on the expansion draft and one on the coming draft. But when you got Jared McCann at such a reasonable price, were you at all tempted to change your thinking and go 7-3 run rather than 8-1?
We thought about it, Kevin, and I think that's one way I would understand why you would look at it. But the other part of it was it wouldn't just be by going 7-3-1. Because the cost was what it was, would that be smart? It was also, if we went 7-3-1, who were we going to be losing? And then what would the cost be to replace that person at their current cap hit? And obviously that would give us increased exposure on defense, and we knew what the market was shaping up to be in terms of free agents, and I think that manifested itself a little bit last night. And then we also knew what kind of the available players were, and we thought they weren't so. I can understand why someone would look at it that way and say we should have kept Jared or others. But our view of it, having more complete information and analyzing it a little bit differently was there was that option, but there was also going to be the cost and whether we could replace the player who we lost at that cap hit in the marketplace or in trade, and then it just didn't add up for us in a net positive way. So we just elected to keep the strategy as is, but we did look at it, investigated for countless days prior to the trade, and then in the subsequent days, hours after.
And the upcoming draft, you've got three picks, I believe. Do you have any intentions of trying to get more? And what are your thoughts on a crazy draft where maybe a lot of players didn't even play this so much this year?
Yeah, we kind of looked at this going into the last draft, Kevin, and that's why we kind of tried to load up on more picks then. So our and looking at it, knowing that we expected to contend on the year and that we may be moving out picks to try to improve our group. I think last year we had 12 draft picks, and so this year with three, so from October 2020 to July 2021, we're going to add 15 new prospects to our system, was the way that we viewed it, and we thought we had a more complete set of information on the players in the October draft, and knowing what was coming, what we expected from our team, and thus what was going to happen to our draft capital at the trade deadline. We tried to shift to 2020 to pick players we thought we'd have a more complete view on, and that said, I think we still expect our scouting staff here to do a great job with the three picks we've got, and be able to return some players. And knowing the work that John Lilly and the staff have put into it, I'm confident that we will make the most of it.
Next, we'll go to Joshua Cloak, The Athletic. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, Kyle, just on this weekend's draft, how would you describe the kind of organizational philosophy heading into the draft, both in terms of the type of player you'd like to acquire and any positional needs you might want to fill through the draft?
Yeah, thanks, Josh. I think I'll answer your second question first. Positional needs, I think that in the draft, we would certainly like to kind of come out even in terms of winger, centers, defense, goalie. But we never also want to sacrifice best players available or take huge steps backwards in terms of what we rank the talent of the player as or what their projected future role may be in the NHL, just to say we've kind of satisfied a positional allotment. What a player's position is when they're drafted, we can also impact a change through development or things of that nature. I'm talking more winger to center or vice versa. Can't really change a forward to a goaltender, at least I haven't seen it yet. So we've tried to balance it out as best we can, but not sacrificing it overall pick value, I would say, is the best way to put it. In terms of our philosophy, we're trying to find the best players possible that check off our scouting criteria. And obviously, talent is a key thing, but so is toughness, so is intelligence, so is defensive play. And we've just tried to follow that here for the last several years. And as we've kind of 2018 was a bit of a late change with the changes that came in May, and then 2019, I thought we did well, and last year we're happy with the early returns on our draft there. So we'll just keep sticking with that. I think the scouts have done a great job, and the leadership of the scouting department has done a great job. But we're always tinkering and looking at areas where we maybe missed or we haven't valued enough, and adapt and roll from there.
And you mentioned internal development. This is maybe a little bit left to center, but you had Rodion Amarov in Toronto for a month. What did you and what did the development staff see from him that maybe would lead you to believe he could be a player for you guys sooner rather than later?
Yeah, we signed him at the conclusion of his season at UFA. Their playoffs that he came over while we were still playing, of course, and was around our staff. I think... It was a great opportunity for him to come in, Josh. And, I think the language is a major element that doesn't get looked at enough. And I'm fortunate to have Nick Antropov with our staff here. He can communicate clearly with him. I was just really impressed with how quickly Rodion picked up on the different developmental areas that they were trying to work with him on. They just tried to, Haley and Danielle, Daryl Belfry, staff that work with them day in and day out, just try to get him set as best possible to go back to the fun, get ready for the season there, which they're already in their training camp and they're a few weeks away from starting their preseason games and then their season. So it happens quickly, and we wanted him to just begin to maximize really the things we need to work with him on so that he can transition over here as soon as possible when he's ready to do so. But I think he's going to have a great season with UFA. It's been really good working with them, actually, as well. And they're very open to working with us in terms of sharing information and, you know, going back and forth. So it's been very, very good. And we look forward to him having a great season there.
Next up is Mark Masters, TSN. Go ahead, Mark.
Kyle, what are you looking to accomplish in the offseason? How do you feel you can improve this roster over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think, Mark, in every offseason, regardless of how it ends, regardless of how the season ends, we're looking to improve the team. I think the needs of the group are fairly obvious, I think, to me and probably people on the outside. We've got a goaltending situation that we need to find a competent partner for Jack Campbell and let them battle it out. Obviously, Jack had a great season. We have a lot of belief in Jack and looking forward to him continuing to take steps next year, but we need to address that. Obviously, we're going to have some opportunity up front, which I think appeals to a lot of the players that are there. If the agency doesn't bear fruit on that for us, if we don't think there's value, then we'll look at the trade market heading into the season. So I think, you know, it's easy to look now and have question marks, and I think you know, come September when camp opens, we'll be at a different spot. But you know, that's where we're looking to improve, sort of in order. We're quite happy with our defense last year and the way it played. I think that manifested itself objectively in the number of shots, goals, different opportunities that we gave up, and look forward to that group continuing to work together with Dean Chenault now coming in to replace Dave Haxtell, who's gone to Seattle, and roll from there. But we have to continue to get better, Mark, and that's what our full focus will be on. It may look a little bit different because of different things that happened in free agency, but our goal is to continue to improve the team every possible way that we can.
What players in the system do you believe have the potential to take on a bigger role next year?
Within the system or potentially challenged for the Leafs? Mark?
Potentially challenged for playing time in the NHL?
Yeah, I think from my view a bit, you know, in the American League last year with our team, you know, we had two guys that already did challenge a play, in Nick Robertson and Joey Anderson. We expect them to continue to take steps in the right direction. Thought Semyon Dyargachintsev, he needs to continue to work on his strength, but he had a really, really good season with Torpedo in the KHL, coached by David Nemirovsky there, and they did an excellent job developing him that he came over with the Marlies, and I thought played really well. We signed Alex Steeves as a free agent out of Notre Dame. He's been making great progress through the summer based on the check-ins that we get from him. On the back end, obviously we're expecting Sandin and Lilligren to continue to push and challenge and take steps there. And then subsequent to them, you've got Christian Rubens and Matt Caldwell that both had good seasons. Rubens went over and played for Latvia at the World Championship at home. And Hollowell, I spent some time on the taxi squad and traveled with the team last year. Different, you know, almost completely different types of players, but players we expect to continue to challenge and move along. And then we start to get some of our younger players from the 2018 and 19 draft coming into the system as well. So that's exciting for us. That said, you know, we feel that depth on both forward and D is an area that we also need to address in free agency to give those young players some competition and make sure that if they're not ready, that we've got the requisite depth to help out there. So we'll be active in that market as well.
We'll go with five more here, beginning with Terry Koshan, Toronto Sun. Go ahead, Terry.
Hey, Kyle, good afternoon. Just the free agency question, where are you, if anywhere, with Fred Anderson and Alex Galchenyuk?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like when the negotiations get public, Terry. I know that the Hyman one obviously has, but you know, we've had communication with both camps, and I don't mean to dodge the question, but I'd just rather leave it at that. The door isn't closed on either player.
And then just getting back to Zach, then, you know, all the indications are Edmonton. Is that what you expect here? I don't imagine you're just reading some of the same things we are, but maybe you are. But is that what your expectation is by the end of the day, that it'll be an Oiler?
I really don't know. I haven't had communication from Todd Reynolds on the matter here today, Terry. So released. I have not had communication from Todd since those reports started. So if I hear from Todd on it and something happens, then we'll release and go from there. But that's where it's at this time.
Okay, thanks. Well.
We'll go to Jonas Siegel with The Athletic. Go ahead, Jonas.
Hey, Kyle. You kind of touched on it before, but I'm just wondering if you could expand on prioritizing protecting Justin Hall in expansion over maybe, you know, protecting a couple more forwards.
Sure. The way we looked at it, Jonas, was, you know, what do we have in Justin and what do we have him for in the future? So he signed for 2 more years, he's taken the last 2 seasons of major steps. I understand he's 29 years old, but extremely well conditioned, low mileage overall on him. I thought, he and Muzzin together as a tandem and as a pair, especially the first 3 quarters of the season, when they played against the other team's best players in our division, those weren't a lot of easy nights. Speaking specifically, we go to Edmonton, Vancouver, obviously we saw what Montreal did after they defeated us, Calgary, every team in our division, Winnipeg, with their top line, had very challenging players to defend against, and Jake and Justin took that role on and performed very well in it. At the end of the season, in the playoffs, I think maybe you could say they would have maybe the effects of all of that over the course of the season and travel and just the way the season was impact them. I'm not sure, but our focus was on we know what he's capable of. We know who he is as a person. We have a strong belief in him. He signed for 2 more years. If he's gone from our team, either in expansion or trade, can we replace what he brings at the cap hit? And we went through it dozens of different ways and looked at every iteration, knowing what the marketplace was saying about him, knowing what Seattle was likely to do, and then looking at the alternatives. You could say, well, we do have guys internally, but then you're back to the whole thing that we've chased for years, which is sacrificing your defense depth and then trying to supplement it by signing someone that's inferior to him at probably around the same cap hit. And so that was a decision that we made. We just did not think that he was replaceable, and we have a lot of belief that he's going to have a great summer, set himself up to perform at his best for 82 games and through the playoffs. And knowing Justin Hall, I would bet that he does it over the course of the next 2 seasons. And, 2 years from now, we'll look back and I'm on the record as my belief in him. And I know he'll play very well for us.
And as for that defense step, do you envision signing another Zach Bogosian type, or do you kind of look internally for growth there?
I think we'd like to give both Sandin and Liljegren every opportunity. We have to begin converting some of these guys from prospects. I think we block them a little bit. They have to earn it. So I'm not saying it's clear the path, but I think we will try to focus in on a defenseman that maybe perhaps brings a little bit more power and presence in the way that Zach did. Rubens has that a little bit as a prospect for us, but we're not flush with it, and so we'll look in free agency and trade to continue to address that. I thought Zach brought a lot for us last year, and we'll stay in touch with him as well as we get in free agency.
Right, we'll go with 2 more. Next up, Luke Fox, Sportsnet. Go ahead, Luke.
Hi, Kyle. I'm wondering what lessons you and your players can learn from the teams that went deep in the final or the final 4 from this past playoffs.
I think there's always a lot you can learn from teams that have success in every sport, Luke. Certainly in hockey, I think I'm always hesitant on this one because you answer what you learn from teams and the immediate response as well. That you guys haven't had their success in the past, and I never want to come up as a comparison. So I'll quantify my answer by saying we're not comparing our team to the teams that had success, even the teams that went to the Final 4. But I think what we can learn from them is that if you look at our team and where we haven't been able to break through, I think in those final deciding games, if you go back and look at all of them, going back of 2018. We go into those games, and I think we're just a little passive and on our heels, and we're trying to feel out the opposition. And the teams that have success, not just in hockey but in other sports, they're going to get to that stage, the Final Four, the finals, and winning. They go out and they attack the opportunity. They don't sit back and wait for the opponent to make mistakes. They go out, they exert themselves in the way that they play. But we did that a little bit early in the series in games 2, 3, and 4. And then we had our moments in game 6. But in game 7, I thought we were a little passive and frozen. And I would say the same for game 5 in Columbus the year prior, game 7 in Boston the previous 2 years, even game 6 in Boston 2019 once they tied the game. So I think the lesson we learned and we try to impart throughout our organization is, in those moments, can we get on the attack and can we assert ourselves in the way that we want to play? We've shown moments of it at times, that we improved upon it this year, but in the end, when it's all on the line, we have to be able to get to that same level. And those teams, that didn't always happen for them either. They had to have their own breakthroughs, and that's what we have to work towards here this offseason through training camp for the regular season to get ourselves ready for that. That would, I think, would be the key lesson. I don't know if you saw Julian's press conference at the end as well. They talked about the sacrifices that the players with Tampa Bay had made. Thought that was pretty bang on as well. And there's a reason why they won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
And a question on your power play, faced a lot of criticism. Do you see it more as a tactical thing, or is there a personnel issue that you're going to try and address this offseason?
I think that's more of something that Sheldon and I discussed privately, and we discussed throughout the season. And, you know, we'll discuss now myself, Sheldon, Dean, Manny, and Spencer Carberry here throughout early in the summer and get ready for the year. But yeah, I expect their power play to perform better than it did. I think we all do. There's no doubt about that. The players do. And I think it is, as it's shown at times, it is capable of performing at a very high level in the league. And I think we have the talent to get there. I think we just need to, frankly, free ourselves up of getting too far inside of our own head when things aren't going well on it, letting that snowball invest there and put a stop to it. But as a team, in terms of our overall performance last year, the regular season, we did a much better job of that than in previous years. But with regards to special teams and the power play, I thought that, and I think you all watched it, so I don't have to BS anybody here. We need to continue to perform at the level we're capable of all the way through the regular season and set ourselves up to the playoffs like the best teams do.
Our last one here, we'll go to David Alter, the Hockey News. Go ahead, David.
Hey, Kyle, with the salary cap flat the way it is, when you approach free agency, not knowing if it's going to be flat for this year or a few more years, does that make long-term deals harder to figure out or less desirable to want to sign? And maybe you just continue kind of going with the short-term deals to build around your core for the upcoming year?
Yeah, I think, David, it all comes down to value. And if we think something is of great value and it's long-term and the player is going to perform at the contract level or beyond, all the way down to the back end of a longer-term deal, then there's no issue on our end. But it certainly is something to consider. I think that showed itself last year in the free agent market. I don't know, with an additional team this year, maybe better prospects of revenue in the season, whether there'll be a huge change this year. But I still think there's just limited space overall, even with Seattle coming into the league. It's only one more team and 81.5 million more in overall cap space amongst the 32 teams now. So I think that is a challenge. You got RFAs coming up from different teams that they're going to take a bigger, much larger piece of the pie, and you have teams kind of planning for that. I think we're fortunate here. We've got our core group locked up for the next number of seasons, and we hope that, you know, by that time that things will start moving in the right direction. But these are the circumstances that we're in, and we have to make the best of them. So we don't dismiss anything because of the term. It just always has to be about value in that regard. So that's the way that we'll approach it here now and move forward. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Our next availability.
Okay, that's Kyle Dubas as he greeted the media. That was the live media session and plenty to go over. And we'll have Kristen Chilton join us next to sort of debrief on what Kyle Dubas had to say there. So the Zach Hyman situation is still up in the air as far as Kyle is concerned, but there's plenty of chatter out there to say the very least. This is Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, TSN1050.ca, also available on the TSN and iHeartRadio apps.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
Leafs Lunch, Jim Taddy subbing for Andy Petrillo. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. Oh, what a relief, guy. Go to leasebusters.com. Let's bring in Kristen Chilton. She was listening to the Kyle Dubas presser. Kristen, welcome in. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks, Jim. How are you?
Good, thanks. In terms of your takeaways, there were a couple things there I circled. I'd love your take on what you heard.
Just in general, I guess the biggest conversation was about Zach Hyman and the news today about him talking with the Edmonton Oilers, and just Kyle Dubas saying that he hasn't heard anything from Todd Reynolds, Zach Hyman's agent, on where that conversation stands right now. He doesn't really have any more insight, it sounds like, than we do, just that he's obviously in conversation with the Oilers and is exploring his options, which is what Dubas said the Leafs wanted him to do, just get a feel for the market, move that process along for him, and then potentially give the Leafs a little more time to figure out how they're going to potentially replace Hyman in the coming season and beyond. But of course, Dubas was, you know, quick to say that we wanted to keep him. We just have certain limitations, as we all know the Leafs do, when it comes to the salary cap. So it really just comes down to, you know, he at this point just doesn't know any more than, you know, he did yesterday, I suppose the best way to put it, about whether, you know, these reports coming out of Edmonton indicate that Hyman is going or gone or whatever it is, or if there's going to be a sign in trade. Dubas said he's open to it. So a lot to kind of unpack there about Hyman. And then just, I thought the other thing, you know, we talked about it so much in the last week about why the Leafs would protect Justin Hall and acquire Jared McCann to avoid potentially losing a key forward in either, you know, or essentially as an insurance policy against losing Alex Kerfoot. Just to hear Dubas, you know, kind of explain and really, I would say, almost co-sign what we've been saying about why protecting Hall was so important. It's because at a $2 million cap hit for a top four right-handed defenseman, if they lost him, where could they replace him at that cap hit? And they just did not see that as being possible. So that's why ultimately Justin Hall was protected. So that's really what I took away mainly from what Dubas was saying, that it's this is just halfway through. You know, you're sort of midway through surgery at this point, and things that are happening, there's still a lot more that has to be figured out before the Leafs roster for next season really comes together.
Yeah, I like the Hall stuff. It's and he brought up the term replacement cost, which is something that most people, when they're analyzing the Leafs, don't get into. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, this guy can go, and or this, the departure of this guy opens up this cap space, but, you know, where do you spend it, and what, you know, the specific fit on the cap is, what's the replacement cost, which is a real business term, but it is totally relevant here, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any question for every GM in the league when they were putting their protected list together. Of course, you have to think, okay, who is most likely to be gone? You know, what are the Kraken going to be looking at? And then how am I going to replace what this player does? And the replacement cost is always what you have to think about in any business. If you lose anything, that's of value. And in this instance, with a player, it's so difficult, because on the open market, you might say, oh, well, you know, you could go sign X defenseman, you know, he'll be available, but does he want to play here? Does he want the kind of contract you can offer, the term, the dollars? It's one thing to say, oh, this person has the talent or the ability, and that's great, but there's so many other factors that go into replacing a player. And when you already have a guy who likes playing here and has a good contract and the term is favorable, and he's the size, you know, he's a big defenseman, he's you know, it plays a role that you don't have behind him in the organization, the replacement cost is just, it's so high. And even if you try to say, well, you could spend a little more of the cap on, you know, that position, well, why would you when you already have something you like and you have the ability to protect it? So I have said all along that I understand. I understand it from both sides. I see why people are frustrated, but I also see it from Duvis's perspective that where the Leafs would have found Justin Hall's replacement at $2 million a year, I don't really see it out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the other situation, the Zach Hyman situation, and again, I always preface anything I say about this is it has nothing to do with Zach. Zach is entitled to market value, and that could be driven by need on another franchise. But it appears that when you go through the reports, that if the offer was similar between Edmonton and Toronto, let's say, that the difference might be that the Toronto 8-year term would be slightly different because they're going to use that 8 years to lower the average, and it looks like Edmonton would be a better fit money-wise for him that way. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's all part of the business aspect of this as well, is that it comes down to, on every contract, what's the term, what's the dollars? And it's got to be, there's got to be a synergy there for the player. And it's also about, where do you want to play? What's the opportunity? But just purely looking at the dollars and cents of it all, I mean, yeah, there's an advantage to the 8-year contract for the player and for the team. I just don't see how anyone is considering giving Zach Hyman, a 29 years old, who plays the game as hard as he does, who has dealt with significant injuries the last 3 years, who is going all in on a full-term 8-year deal. It's just, it doesn't make good business sense in the long term, because whether it's this GM or another, someone's going to have to deal with it down the road, right? Like, it's just a tough spot, I think, for that. And we see it all the time. We see players who sign 8-year deals and they look great at the time, and they are for a couple of years, and then there's 5 or 6 seasons sometimes in the worst cases where things just don't go the way that anybody hoped that they would. So you have to be strategic as the player and as the team signing him in these situations. And if Zach Hyman goes to Edmonton, he gets a 7-year deal, and that's, you know, what ultimately works for him and his family. Dubas was the first one to say he's earned it. He's earned every dollar he's going to get on the open market. He's spent 6 years here, you know, working to be in the position that he is right now. And for him, what he values, obviously, is there's a list for every player of what is most important and what they most need, and only Hyman knows what that is for him. But I would think that at this point, he's just got to be A, exploring his options, and B, feel open to the best possible term and dollars figure that he can get, and that may very well be Edmonton.
Now, you and I have talked about this, and Kyle admitted the goalie search is going to be tricky, and it's very high on his radar, and maybe Freddie comes back. Don't know exactly what happens there, but this is another tricky situation in terms of cap fit and player fit, isn't it?
It is, but I think that's going to be the case for most things that the Leafs are looking at going into free agency this year, because it's, you know, do you want to trade for a goalie, or do you want to sign one on the open market? Is there something available there that you feel confident in, and bringing in kind of a new body? I mean, Dubas said that there's still conversations happening with Frederik Andersen's camp. Certainly that door is not closed, but it, from all indications we've heard so far, Andersen's probably looking for something higher dollar-wise than the Leafs are able to offer him. So that pushes you into the free agent market. Do you see somebody there who can, as Dubas just said, come in and essentially challenge Jack Campbell for that starter's job? Do you see that potential out there in someone? And if Campbell wins the starting job, will the player that you've acquired be a good partner for him? Will he be, you know, supportive and someone that you can rely on in the dressing room to have that strong goalie tandem? Every good team has that. You know, you need the piece who is obviously your number one, your guy, and then you need the support system as well. So it's tricky when you don't have a lot of money to spend, especially on a goaltending position, and when your 5-year starter in Andersen is still hoping to be paid like he's going to be a starter for the next 5+ years. And so that's a bit of a spot that the Leafs find themselves in. But we know that there are some goalies on the market. We know that obviously they're going to do their due diligence, but Dubé said, hey, if we don't see it on the open market, that's when you go into a trade situation. And they do have some players that might be of interest that they could dangle out there and say, hey, you know, we like this goalie, you need a defenseman, we've got, you know, X, Y, and Z here. And that may be the path that they go down, but it's all just wrapped up in you've got this very limited dollars to spend. And how are you going to make the most of them, whether that's upfront, goalie, defense, whatever it is, how do you maximize a very small amount of cap space remaining?
Kristen, thanks very much. Look forward to sharing the show with you tomorrow.
As do I, Jim. Talk to you then.
Okay, thank you. That's Kristen Chilton, our Maple Leaf reporter. So approximate cap hit, our available monies to spend $9.3 million on a couple of wingers and a goalie, minimal. So you might want to add more, but that's what we're talking about. We always have to reduce it to that. Coming up next, we'll have Ryan S. Clark. He covers the Seattle Kraken for The Athletic. So we'll have him next to explain what happened yesterday, all those leaked picks. I mean, we knew what the roster was before the show started. This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, also available on TSN and iHeartRadio apps. Thanks, Subby, for Andy Petrillo, who's on Olympic Detail, and I'll be with you at 1 o'clock for game day. But in the meantime, let's talk about the Seattle Kraken. Ryan S. Clark is here, reporter for The Athletic. Ryan, welcome. How are you today, sir?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Very good. Ryan, so, I mean, like all this stuff, it leaks all over the place. I mean, the roster was pretty well known before the official ceremony in Seattle. How did all that play out, or did it?
I mean, it was interesting just because talking to some fans, they were aware of what was going on. And one fan said, I saw a couple names come out and said, all right, I'm going to get off social because I'm going to the expansion draft. And I kind of want to see it firsthand. While his girlfriend was like, I stayed off social. I don't have a single clue about what is going on. She didn't even know that names are even being leaked. So there is that. But, you know, there are others that, again, when you look at social, say, hey, they had a problem with it. But, you know, it's interesting because when you look at it from an objective conversation piece, it's kind of everybody enters that social media contract in a sense. And we see it with television shows and movies all the time. Like, you want to be connected, but you run the risk of seeing a spoiler alert. So what do you do? Do you navigate that? Do you stay away from it? Do you accept there's a possibility you might find something out you didn't want to know?
Yeah, in the old days, we'll remember that as an embargo. Here's the information, but you can't release it until a certain date. But social media certainly wiped that out, didn't it?
It did, but at the same time, it's one of those things where this is an information era, and not just so much an information era, but an era where people want information now more than ever. And you know, look, it got talked about and addressed last night, and, you know, there's so many different thoughts and opinions on just kind of how this whole thing came out. But either way, it still turned out to the Kraken having an event where 5,000 people showed up, and even if some people knew the roster, they still wanted to be there, and now it's out there for the world to see.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it was a good show, and you could see the effect it had locally, that's for sure. Let's deal with the roster. I mean, Ron Francis has put together a roster that's heavy on the blue line, which most people would expect, but he's got some cap space. So give us your take on what he has drafted and where it goes from there.
Well, when you look at this team, it has $28.95 million in cap space that's available. But then when you look at where that money is spent, so you look at defense, like you just talked about, they're ninth in defense spending, which, yes, we just made the Seattle Kraken sound like a nation that's being talked about on the news for defense spending, so hooray for us. But in all seriousness, they've invested a little bit more than $21 million in defense. You look at goaltending, it's 4.216, but again, you've just signed Chris Driedger to this $3.5 million contract, and with Vitek Vanacek, he's in the final season of his deal. That's worth $716,667 annually. And again, those kinds of savings for two players that last year played vital roles for their teams in net, it's the kind of value that allows you to have that kind of free cap space. But then when you look at forwards, they have 10 forwards under contract at $27.2 million. According to Cap Friendly, that's the eighth lowest amount in forwards invested right now, with the idea that, of course, that's going to change for some teams because, again, free agency And with the Kraken, there's still more pieces to add. And so when you look at everything that Ron Francis and his front office staff have achieved, it was always with the plan of weaponizing your cap space. And now they're in a position where they can be selective about trades, how much cap space they want to take on or not take on. And when it comes to free agency, they're going to be able to do some things that, as one agent said, makes them a unicorn compared to other teams in terms of how much cap space is going to be available.
The Carey Price story, obviously a headliner. Do you think they should have, were they even close?
Francis got into this yesterday, and you know, he said that one of the things they did is they wanted to look at every player's medical history. They wanted to take a bunch of items into consideration, and they just wanted to make sure that for them, they were making what they felt were the best decisions, not only in the short term, but in the interim. And when you look at Carey Price, he's 33 going on 34. His contract, when it ends, he'll be 38 going on 39. And when you look at the numbers from this past NHL season, the only two goaltenders who were 38 and older to start more than 20 games and a 56-game shortened regular season were Mike Smith and Pekka Rinne. Pekka Rinne went 10-12-1. Mike Smith won 21 games. That's quite a gap when you look at those two. And so if you're the Kraken, you're trying to think about these things, not only in the sense of the amount of money that you would have invested in one player in one position, but also the amount of time that you have invested in one player at that one position.
Ryan, wish we had more time. Thanks very much for stopping by. All the best.
Hey, thank you so much.
That's Ryan Clark, who covers the Seattle Kraken for the Athletic. So I guess the only thing that would annoy Leaf fans is the flying Kraken with the player's name in it. And on Tuesday, I think it was, we had Alex Kerfoot's name coming out of that fish, and yesterday it was Jared McCann. And, you know, you could debate and go on and on about all of that stuff. But, you know, the bottom line is, because I was in television, so that was recorded. It wasn't live. Weeks didn't go running all around Seattle. It was recording. Come on. So kind of a letdown. And we'll continue the discussion on our next broadcast, which will be game day. I'm going to sub for Matthew Cause, and Mark Masters will be our first guest. And we're going to go over more hockey talk as the roster freeze expires in exactly 3 minutes. Thanks for joining us on Leafs Lunch.